flowers are blooming, the grass is growing, and it's time to chop the weeds. Thanks to our sponsors at Manscaped, you can trim those holes safely and efficiently. I'm talking about ball trimmers, y'all. Manscaped, the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming, have an exclusive offer for the Thomas Island audience. If you use our code, TAMA, and you'll get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Join the 2 million men who trust Manscaped. They're here to make sure your balls are trimmed and smelling nice. After all, it's time for some spring cleaning. Manscaped has all the tools to get you spring ready. Have you heard about the Weed Whacker? It's a nose and ear hair trimmer that provides proprietary skin-safe technology which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. There's no more gross nose hairs flying off into the wind. Plus, the premium Manscaped Weed Whacker uses a 9,000 RPM motor and a 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. Manscaped is making it easier than ever to whack your weeds and also to make sure that you have the most confidence while also providing hygiene. Speaking of incredible hygiene, Manscaped has formulations to keep you fresh and ready for everything that comes your way all day. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. It's starting to get hot outside, and this is crucial for your balls to stop sticking to your leg. I use it. It's great, especially as the summertime gets swampier. If you go to manscaped.com right now and use the code TAMA, you'll get 20% off and free shipping. That's right, use the code TAMA for free shipping and 20% off at manscaped.com. Manscaped, shave your balls.
All right, we're back, Ross. We're going to dive right in. We're going to talk about whatever you want to talk about this week. Talk to me, man. What are we going to talk about this week?
This week, we got a real good topic, Tama. This week, we're going to talk about a pretty unique era for Bullet Club, an era where you all may have thought you were at the top of the mountain. It was maybe your first time feeling like you're at the peak of the wrestling world. Between 2014 and 2016, some folks maybe call this the golden age or the first golden age of Bullet Club, but some more will call it the phenomenal era, because this is the era you bring in a little future superstar by the name of AJ Styles, and AJ Styles seems to lead the Bullet Club on an upward trajectory. I mean, not that you weren't on a state of everything is going up to begin with. That first year is a rocket, but it seems that AJ Styles adds a little bit of fuel to that fire. So let's talk about this era. You're coming out of losing Prince Devitt to WWE, and Bullet Club is dealing for the first time with losing a leader. What was the feeling like between, especially the three of you, Carl Anderson, you and Fale, as that core four? What did you guys kind of feel was the future before you knew AJ Styles was coming in?
We didn't really think that far ahead. We kind of were just in the moment, living in the moment. We knew that Prince David had, he was leaving. And at that moment, we were just like, all right, well, what do we got to do next? And it was kind of just trying to figure it out. We had no idea what the next move was going to be. I just, in the natural order of things in Japan, next in line would be Carl Anderson. That's who my thought would have been the next guy to, okay, he's, you know, seniority, he's the one that's been here the longest. Once Prince David leaves, he'll be the next one up, and then we rally. And he was already like our guy anyway, so, you know, it was just natural that we would fall behind him. So yeah.
And so Carl is kind of your interim leader as Prince David has gone off.
Yeah.
Who is the first one to bring up, hey, we're thinking about bringing in AJ Styles? Who was the first person you remember saying
Carl.
AJ's name? Carl. Carl was very much behind the scenes managing it too, kind of saying
when you're seniority like that, the higher ups will like put that responsibility on you to look after the other guys. You know, that was his job, to make sure that everything in the locker room, everybody's cool, everybody in the group is cool. Any gripes and grievances would go through him, and he would take it to the top. The top would bring down their gripes and grievances through him, and he likes that. You know, that's just seniority. That's just the food chain, I would say. Did you say that?
No, yeah, absolutely. It's a ranking. It's an order to things. And so, what was your initial thought when you hear AJ Styles is coming in? Because he's obviously made a name for himself in TNA. He's not a nobody when he comes in. He's already kind of a star. What were you thinking when you?
I didn't think much because I knew of him, but I didn't know of him like deep stuff, you know. And I knew he was doing his thing in TNA. He was a top guy. I seen a little bit of his work, but not closely enough to study it. You know, I just was worried about what I was doing out there in Japan. Mm-hmm. So I never paid close attention. But once I got word that he was coming, I started looking to see what the deal was. And we're like, all right, we'll just, you know, adapt and see what we can do together.
How did he fit in with the chemistry that the group had already kind of established when they first bring in Styles? And it's, you know, because Anderson, Gallows, all of you guys, you've got this group, and you know all groups are going to have a chemistry. They're going to have a rhythm. How did Styles fit into the rhythm to start off?
He was great right from the get. I remember we were down in Fukuoka, a city down south of Japan, and we just did a pay-per-view, and we all came back. I think this is when he won the belt.
So the very first title win against.
Yeah, and we came back to the hotel, and we all got out, you know, we just did a sponsor. We all got back in the taxi cab, and we got out in front of the hotel, and he's like, hey, guys, can I talk to you guys for a minute? And we, you know, everyone was right there, and we kind of huddled around him, and he's like, look, I'm here to help move this forward. Whatever you guys need, whatever I can do to help, I'm here. Let me know what I got to do. And just from him saying that, you know, we were like, all right, he's a team guy, you know, to let us all know that he's here to help. And from then on, it was like, all right, cool, we got our guy, let's move forward, you know. I'll never forget that was my first impression of him, really.
Him, just a team player fitting into the group like a glove.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Oh yeah.
Awesome. That's awesome. And that first night when he wins not the first night, but when he finally wins that IWGP heavyweight title, it's not just him. That he is helped by Yujiro Takahashi. And so you get your first Japanese member joining Bullet Club at this time. Uh-huh. It's also when you've got the logo that's behind you right now that we come to know of as the it's the second Bullet Club logo, but it's the most iconic.
Most iconic.
Was this And it's not just Styles with belts. Fale is the Intercontinental Champion. Yeah. You're starting to bring in the Bucks are running roughshod over the junior heavyweight tag division. Uh-huh. You're about to bring in a certain guy by the name of Kenny Omega, and so he's also no slouch when it comes to the junior division. He gets that IWGP Junior title pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Did it all just kind of hit you guys that Bullet Club was starting to become an actual force in business and not just in New Japan storyline?
No, but in my head, we were going to the top. So there was no changing that in my head or realizing, everything was just such a high and we were just rocking and rolling. I didn't think anything different from we're moving and we're doing good. Let's keep going, you know? Mm-hmm. And by the time I remember this picture, it had everybody had straps except for me, but everybody has straps, you know, Fale with the Intercontinental. We got AJ Styles. He got a strap.
Fale with an Intercontinental. We got Gallows and Machine Gun with a heavyweight tag team champs. We got Kenny Omega with the junior champ. We got the Young Bucks with the with a junior tag champ.
Tag belts, yeah.
Yeah. So
you technically also have a Young Lion in Cody Hall. So you're yep. almost like parallel promotion yeah. to New Japan in the way that New yeah. Japan has. You got your heavyweights, you mm-hmm. got your junior heavyweights, you got yep. a tag team, you got a Young Lion. Was that an intentional mirroring of New Japan, or was it just Bullet Club trying to make sure we have someone in every division to make this a domination thing?
It was a way to set our tone, our seriousness mm-hmm. as us being a serious to be taken serious as a group. Okay. You know, and that means that we had to dominate every weight class. So mm-hmm. to be really taken serious, you know, so we can be a threat in every class. So, we started to notice that we were becoming big internationally when we were seeing before everybody had the belt, we were mm-hmm. seeing our logo on other American companies' shows. Mm-hmm. And we knew it was serious when the word got out that they were banning people from wearing the logo at their shows.
Okay.
And that's when we were like, oh, shoot, because you mm-hmm. saw it everywhere. And I remember this. I remember our president went to WrestleMania, mm-hmm. and all he saw was Bullet Club shirts everywhere. Everywhere. And all our friends over there that work overseas told us, you know, man, you guys, we're at this WrestleMania. That's all we see is this Bullet Club everywhere. And that's when we knew. So the belts and everything else came after we were already steamrolling. You just can't deny the iconic logo. So mm-hmm. when it's cool, it's cool. It's going to flip. It's going to go no matter what, you know, it's going to go. So then belts, it's like doing a promotion with nothing to back it up, and then until it catches up, you know, the belts and all that finally caught up to the logo, how popular the logo. It just pushed the brand up to what the logo was, because there was people wearing the logo without knowing it was a wrestling logo.
I was going to say, because I remember being at independent shows of that era, just going, like learning what Bullet Club was simply because of the fact that they would tweet me, and I was like, okay, this is a thing.
But There was people wearing it and not even knowing that it was a wrestling thing. They just thought it was just a design, you know. Mm-hmm. It was people, non-wrestling people, non-wrestling okay. fans that were just wearing it. So, and then you know, word of mouth, everything else caught up. The belts, everybody getting the belts, and really pushed us to the front. I think. Once those two connected, the logo mm-hmm. and everybody with the belt, and like our boss seeing that in WrestleMania, all our logo everywhere, yep. all the shirts, that's when they actually started thinking about how can we do that, we can have more influence internationally. And then okay. this is where Jeff Jarrett came in. And
okay, that was good. I want to talk about Jarrett, but first we got to talk about Yujiro, because Yujiro is a big. It's as big as Bullet Club had gotten. You didn't have a Japanese talent, and
no.
the way you always talked about Japan, you need a Japanese talent in that group to make it more than just this foreign stable. How did Yujiro kind of fit into the chemistry of the Bullet Club? Was he like AJ, where he just kind of it was already well, kind of fit right in, or did you guys kind of have to work him into the group?
Yeah, we I've known Yujiro since like. He was with Naito as the
There's No Limit, yeah.
And, No Limit, yeah. I've known him since then, before I even came to New Japan. He came to Florida, and we used to go party together. You know.
So there's already that history there. Yeah.
So you know, he's such a great brother, good dude, and we had already known. He was just a perfect fit, but it was also the turning of the, we were no longer Gaijin outsiders. We were so you couldn't just look at us, oh, these are the outsiders of Japan, these foreigners. No, because now Yujiro changed the game on that. Now we were legit bad guys all around, you know. So, it was a nice touch too, how he came in and helped AJ. It was a nice, beautiful touch. You know, props to the Booker for that.
I was going to say, it's a unique kind of factor to Bullet Club. I feel like there's going to be a whole extra Yujiro episode just about Tokyo Pimp. He's, him and Pieter are fascinating. But so let's talk about Jeff Jarrett.
Him or just Pieter? is it just Pieter that is fascinating to you?
You know what? You caught me. You caught me on that one. But let's talk about Jeff Jarrett, because Jeff Jarrett is, he finds his way into every group. Am I wrong? I mean, he was in the NWO. He was in every faction in TNA. How did Jeff Jarrett end up in Bullet Club?
The thought was, New Japan thought the appeal to go, to go international, we needed somebody that they trusted that could, they've had done business with before. And Jeff Jarrett had done business while when he was head of TNA.
Okay.
They've done business together with New Japan. So New Japan thought that they could use, Jeff Jarrett wasn't doing anything at that time. I think he was building global
Force Wrestling. He had Luke and Carl on a couple of the tapings for, and I think some of the baseball stadium shows that.
Yeah, man.
You ever talk to him about Global Force Wrestling? Did you ever?
Hell no, man. I didn't want to be a part of that. He didn't want to pay me, so he didn't want to pay me what I wanted, but which was probably too high because I thought I was worth more than I really was. So,
if it's too high. Because speaking as someone who's watching Global Force be advertised to wrestling fans, they made Bullet Club a pretty heavy part of, like, yeah, we're definitely gonna have Bullet Club. We got Machine Gun. We got Gallows. Did they?
They put me on a magazine on
they
their
put you global, in the magazine.
They put me on their global magazine and said I was a part of it, and I was like, "What the f, man? Come on now!" I'll let this one slide. Oh, slick Jeff Jarrett, you. You slick Rick, you. But I'll let it slide.
Jarrett finds a way.
Finds a way, man. And that's how I was able to survive this whole time, man. And props to him. You know?
Oh, I know. Absolutely. Hey, he's still thriving to this day. He's one of those constants in life. So when Bullet Club is kind of expanding this much, did you kind of feel like TNA was trying to salvage some of the people that may have been because, like, with what you got, you bring in AJ Styles, who obviously New Japan knew from TNA because they had the relationship there. Same with, they did some good business with Jarrett. Was this how were they kind of like dipping their toe into international expansion, the idea of what would eventually become New Japan of America, or was it a completely different attempt on its own to expand?
It was a different attempt because they New Japan just didn't realize. Mm-hmm. What an impact we had made until they started thinking. So they were just trying to figure it out on their toes with what they could do, and say they thought that Jeff Jarrett was the way, but that ended up being a flop. What really extended our reach internationally was we had Foot Soldiers, which was running the indie scenes all around America, and they were a hot commodity, which was the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks were like just hot on the indies, and once they ran around representing Bullet Club, the awareness grew rapidly. And plus, Gallows and Machine Gun and I were doing indies. We were doing shows, out all around the Southwest, or just the Southeast. The Southeast, North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee. We were doing all these Southern shows and just kind of spreading Bullet Club awareness. That was what helped us grow internationally. Were we doing it legally through a New Japan contract? No.
I was going to say, because this is also around the time you had Chase Owens, and he would come through the Chicago indie scene a lot.
He wasn't a regular.
He would show up in Bullet Club tights, and he would put on a really good mat. And so it was one of those cases where you could kind of tell, like you said, he was a foot soldier. He was there to keep Bullet Club alive. He's still with the group to today because of the standard that he set.
Yeah,
back in 2015 when you joined, but it So you feel it was these independent shows? Was it Ring of Honor, or was it more of the independent that kind of
there
helped?
Was Ring of Honor. There was some Ring of Honor. There was definitely Ring of Honor there. I know that the Bucks and Machine Gun and AJ had done shows with them out there in New York and whatnot. So that was really hot, really really hot stuff. You know, from what I had seen. So that really spread awareness internationally for us Bullet Club, not the tactics that New Japan had, you know, come up with. And how would they know? They've never done nothing like that before, you know. So if they didn't, they were like, they had a gem and they had no clue how to deal with it, you know.
Did they have you guys under contracts, or you're just going tour by tour at that point?
Tour
right?
by tour, man, I'll tell you.
And you're the hottest act in wrestling.
Yeah,
you're on handshakes and good faith, just based on tour. So when do you start realizing that other companies might want what Bullet Club has? Because you guys are on top of the mountain right now. It feels like you guys, like you said, everyone's got gold. It's the booking is finally matching how the fans see the brand.
Yeah. Oh, so this is how it happened. In 2015, Carl Anderson had signed like a long ass term deal with New Japan, and he was coming. His term was up in the beginning of 2016. So we were coming at the end of 2015, like October, November, December. Mm-hmm. These are the times we start. Like usually we hear something from somebody to start talking about contracts. Nobody approached. Nobody. We're the hottest thing in wrestling. Mm-hmm. We're the hottest thing, literally, in wrestling, and nobody had approached us to lock us down. And they've always done this the year before. They was locked, you know, come a couple months before and locked. And the year that we're the hottest, and New Japan was making stupid money, then nobody approached us. And they just thought that – they just didn't think that that we could go anywhere. That was the problem.
Okay.
They thought that we couldn't go anywhere, and that was a word from one of the higher ups to me.
Really? So they just straight up tell you where are you gonna go?
I was drinking with them. Me and Machine Gun were drinking with him, and I was like, "Yo, what's up? Why haven't you guys signed us?" You know? Did I? He goes, "Wow, man, you always talking money, man." I was like, "Yeah, because we've been fucking busting our ass for you guys." And he goes, "Wow, you know?" I was like, "What if we get up and leave?" He goes, "Where you gonna go?" And I said, "Oh shit! I think I just gave it away by saying it, doing the voice."
So, yeah, no, we knew who you were talking about. It's so, 2020. Yeah, you know, rebuilt.
And it's all love. So, and I took around. And I said, "Okay, all right, watch us." And sure enough.
And so, who reaches out for? Is it WWE? Is it TNA? Is it who starts reaching out to like you and Carl and
no one reached out to me. I didn't hear nothing from nobody until the next year. But Carl and Gallows and AJ were contacted by TNA. And,
okay. And so TNA gets the ball rolling. It's Dixie and TNA trying to get AJ back. And are they trying to get all three of them, or does AJ say, "If you're going to bring me, you're going to bring
me"? They wanted AJ real bad. And that kind of fell into AJ, "Hey, you got to grab these two guys, you know?" Mm-hmm. And that's how that, and there was a bidding, you know, from that, I think it was like December when it was hot. Like we thought TNA was the deal, and then WWE came out of nowhere, like blindsided everybody, and just kind of, you know, hit them up. That first week of, like, was that January 3rd, the day before Wrestle Kingdom, the boys gave their notice. Shinsuke, AJ Styles, Carl Anderson, and Gallows gave their notice that they were going. And it was like a madhouse. Everybody was like, it was like scrambling. Everybody was scrambling. It's like when you turn the lights on, all the cockroaches were running around. That's how it was. So frantic. It was so like, all the higher ups were like, they were like scratching their heads, sweating, and you just didn't know. Yeah. I'm like,
I don't want to call it chaos, because, you know, obviously, but it sounds like a very chaotic kind of time. So when did TNA reach out to you, or was it just well, they didn't reach out to you, but was it just WWE that talked to you about possibly leaving?
It was only WWE. Once the other boys was confirmed gone, we did a Wrestle Kingdom, and after Wrestle Kingdom, I was contacted.
Okay.
And then I went and had a meeting with Triple H, and I gave my a verbal agreement, and I said, okay, yeah, I'll go. And so I said, give me one more week. Give me one more tour. I need to go back to Japan and tell them that I'm leaving. And So
what is New Japan do to when you come to them and say, I've talked to WWE, it's looking like I'm heading.
I came in, I told them, hey, I got some news. And I said, they're like, oh, so they called a meeting. I told them that, hey, this will be my last tour, I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. And they were like, they were just so stunned. And I was like, I'm stunned that I haven't even got a contract. I've been here now 6 years. Yeah. And so they pulled me and tried to negotiate. And I was like, sorry, no negotiation. I already gave my verbal.
It's like a notice to give notice or something.
Yeah, you know, I already told WWE I was coming, and we were starting the paperwork, and so close the books, and I that was it. And then the next day, we, you know, that night, me, Carl, Machine Gun, and Fale, Gallows, and Fale went drinking, kind of like, oh, you know, celebrating. We're, you know, oh, it's a good time. Next day, we had to go to work. Fale, the old sneakster Fale here, didn't want, you know, he was staying, but yep. You know, he knows the deal. He went and told, you know, I think he had a meeting with the higher ups, like, what to do next, and Fale, and they asked him what can we do, and he's like, I think if you bring his brother, he'll stay, and okay, that's how it
so
happened.
That's what kind of brings you back into New Japan, is this idea that you can finally come full circle with your brother. You get denied by WWE, and he gets taken in, and now you guys finally have this chance to be a tag team on a huge platform. Does that change the way you look at not only New Japan but Bullet Club? Because when you and Carl and Luke and AJ are thinking about heading to WWE, you guys are on top of you're on top of the mountain, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so AJ and Carl and Luke show you this path that is it's money, and it's definitely staying where you're at on the mountain. But then Fale and New Japan basically say there's this other way. You might be able to keep climbing. I mean, what was your original thought of what was going to happen to Bullet Club when you leave New Japan? Do you think it'll either continue on, or do you think it was probably going to end up becoming something else?
It was hard then, because I just knew with those guys leaving, there were such major players in our group and leaders that I knew I had to step up. Okay. I knew I had to step up, and me and Fale, we had to take the lead on this and figure out, because, and at the same time, you know, the torch was being passed to Kenny Omega, and he was a new guy to us that we, you know, he had his way, and, you know, his chemistry was different than us core four chemistry. So, but his chemistry was tight with Bucks and them, and our chemistry was tight with Bucks, but they had their own little like click. So it was like, uh-oh. So we just had to figure out, you know, how to keep things steady and not rock the boat, and make sure that we're still going the path going up and moving forward.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah.
So what was the, when you finally get word that they're going to bring in Tongaloa, they're going to put you under contract, they're going to, you know, kind of take care of you in the way that you want them to take care of you after 6 years.
Yeah.
What is the conversation like with you and Carl and Luke when you have to tell them that, you know, I think I'm going to stay.
They were kind of like, they were surprised, especially Carl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carl was surprised that, cause WWE is the goal, right? That's the goal.
If you're especially 2016, New Japan World is just debuting. Like, you're not. It is a different platform. It was seen at that point as the job security.
If you're playing football and you want to be a football player, the NFL is that's the mecca. That's where you try to reach your goal. And if not, then nobody plays football to go play in Canada. You know, that I'm aware of. Sorry, Canadians. You know, but
hey, the Canadian Football League has a rich history. They gave us the Rock. They don't.
but you know what I mean. You know, and so like, I turned that down to I just saw something different
you keep saying you saw something different. What is it different that you see, like when you know it's going to be you and Tonga and Fale, and you've got the elite also bringing these new eyes to Bullet Club. Did you see Bullet Club kind of the Bullet Club that it is today, or did you just kind of see, all right, there is this other way?
Well, I wasn't, for me to stay the way I saw things, if I can come from my own perspective and how I look at myself, I knew if I went to WWE, I would have to start again from the bottom. Which I was willing to do because that was my door in. And once you go in, you just move, you know, I knew I trusted my abilities and my competitiveness to take me to the top.
Yeah.
But, you know, my brother, I saw something that we had started, but we got separated. And here was a chance for us to unite and really do what we came in together to do. And you know, so... and plus my loyalty to my family is utmost important. So, especially, so yeah. And Fale knew, he knows what's up, man. The Tongan thing.
Fale was already staying. Fale, you can tell he had the plans. He was like, all right, if we can't get Tama, bring in Tonga. We'll keep Tama. Like, you can tell he earned that underboss title.
General
title. Let's not mince words.
Yeah. So, if I could get my brother here, then I knew, okay, that me and him can, you know, we can definitely put in some work. I'm already at the position with these guys leaving. There was holes to fill, and I knew I was that guy to fill, especially with Gallows and Machine Gun placement that was opening up, you know. Gotcha. So I knew that. And so, yeah, I saw that. And I just loved – I love working for New Japan. You know, they kind of handled some things wrong with the contracts and whatnot. I mean, like, they kept me for 6 years when nobody else took me. So, contract or no contract, you know, they were still good to me. So, you know, I had to give, you know, most people just like, I'm out, you know, they called me twice into that office to negotiate. So I was, you know, most people, once they say no, they're gone. But, you know, I came back and now I was back with my brother, and now you got three Tongans up in there, you know. So I could only see positive things, and it was just going to change. Now we had a direct, I thought at the time that we had a direct say on what the vision and the goals of Bullet Club would be, but there was a split because obviously you saw later on.
Yeah,
I was inside. You know, at that time, I thought, okay, now we got direct say on which way we can steer our Bullet Club and what we do and the image and everything. So, yeah.
So, did you feel like you kind of had to rebuild Bullet Club after Gallows and Carl and AJ left? Like, that period between when they leave in like January and February of 2016, and then October of 2016, when you finally bring in Tonga Loa, is that middle period? How do you look at that? Is it this kind of rebuilding, kind of reworking the chemistry, or was it just business?
I looking back at it now, it was such an uneasy time because I had one thing in my mind, and what we were had, I thought I was just going to continue the game plan from the first group into this. But the other group had a different game plan, so they were doing their own thing, and none of us knew it. And we were just like, there was no leadership, there was none, there was no like, you know, there was none.
It's not in the way that it was in the first couple of years, because even AJ Styles has said he never, when he was in Bullet Club, despite the fact people call it the phenomenal era, he never felt like he was the leader. He felt like it was a group that led itself. And so is this era, it's not the group so much leading itself, or is it's the group kind of pulling at each other?
Yeah, that was the deal. I've dealt, you know, not to go too deep into it, because I think this is something that we all, this is a different era we can talk about. But I was trying, you know, I backed Kenny up because I saw myself as Carl's, I was taking his spot. So I had to step into that role, and his role was to support the front guy. And so I saw that, and so I was trying to, but he, you know, obviously.
Kenny didn't, because like with Carl and Devitt, and then Carl and AJ, you can have that consigliere role that you would find in like the mafia, where the boss is helped by this right hand.
Yeah.
You're saying that Omega wasn't as open to having a consigliere. He didn't want that.
His guys were Kenny, was the young Bucks.
It was the Bucks, yeah. And so it became this, it was like a tension between you and the Bucks, of the sort of which of us is.
Yeah. That's not how they saw it. You know, they came with a way, you know, the Bucks, they came from ROH, and they had a click. It was a very clickish thing. And I didn't know how the chemistry in that role, if there was a hierarchy, you know, that was, you know, so they did their own thing, their style. New Japan, we just knew a hierarchy. That's just Japanese culture. You knew who was where and what. And America is kind of like a freestyle. It's clicks, you know.
I get exactly what you're saying. And that's why I don't want to go too deep, because I think all we need to do is talk about the fact that this is where that tension starts.
Yeah.
If you're a New Japan fan, you know where that tension ends. It ends somewhere in San Francisco. But right now, this is where that starts to begin. So let's tie a nice big bow on this first. I feel like it's the first half of Bullet Club. Is that that up until 2016, when you guys are going up and up, and then AJ, Luke, Carl all go their way, you, Fale, and everyone else go a separate way. What do you feel you learned most from that era, where you, Fale, Carl, Luke, AJ, everyone is just on top of the world, everyone's got a belt, everyone's got direction, that first golden age? Because I feel like there have been a couple now, but that first golden age, what did you really kind of take from it heading forward?
Quickly, on top of my head, without thinking about it, it's just the fun, how much fun I was having, and inside the ring and outside the ring, and the brotherhood, friendship that was happening, the camaraderie. So I think my takeaway would be, like, if you're having a lot of fun in what you're doing, that's going to take you places that you never thought that you could reach.
Damn. That's a good lesson. It's a good base to draw from. Do you feel like you've really helped kind of keep that mentality alive in the Bullet Club of today?
I try to. I try to. You can see there's a lot of playfulness there, but there comes growth, and I think that, you know, and you gotta, like, I think if you've played too much, it's like a balance. You gotta know when to do it, because if you play too much, nobody's gonna respect you. You know, and you got to earn everybody's respect. So you got to know that there's just times and places. And the further, I think, more you go up, you got to grow up, I think.
I would be very worried if you were the same person in 2020. I'd be worried if you were the same person in 2020 that you were in 2019. That's how people work. We got to grow. We got to. You always have to change. It's such a fascinating era of Bullet Club, because it really that, like I said, that's when the logo comes about. That's when everything kind of comes together, and it becomes more than just. I feel like it was a group of friends in a storyline until then, and now it becomes the business. It becomes this almost parallel part of wrestling. It's a mirror world almost.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah,
this was a deep dive, Tama.
Oh, man. Good stuff, man. Ross, I'm going to wrap it up right there. I think we covered a lot here. We took deep dive. Okay. We let everybody in on that time. Definitely a memorable time. Definitely a learning curve all together. And I think this kind of information can go out and people can learn from it too, you know. And I'm all about spreading information, you know, right, correct information, facts, and it hopefully helps everybody out. So, but at the same time, everybody can enjoy the content. So, bro, yep. Thank you very much, man. All right.
Thank you.
Next week, brother.
Awesome. Talk to you next week. This was great. Ain't nobody really than Gorilla. Ain't nobody really than Gorilla. I said, ain't nobody really than Gorilla. Ain't nobody really than Gorilla. Gorilla Tactics. Whoa, you know we bought action. Whoa, you know we not lacking. Whoa, that just not matching. Whoa, jump up on the road. Put my feet up in your face. No, we ain't tapping out. What? Y'all ain't put this right. Whoa, Gorilla Tactics. Ain't nobody really than Gorilla. Gorilla Tactics. Ain't nobody really than Gorilla.
Gorilla Tactics. Ain't nobody really than Gorilla.